This is Retails, Conversations with Profit Protection, the podcast that talks direct with retailers about all things loss prevention, with your host, Nicole Smith. Did you know that the Profit Protection Future Forum is the only not-for-profit industry body promoting the interests of retail loss prevention professionals in Australia and New Zealand?
Hi there and welcome to the show. Today I'm joined by Rob Godwin, Chief Executive Officer of the National Retailers Association here in Australia. Welcome to the podcast, Rob, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Rob, you are a very busy man, CEO of the NRA, and for our American listeners, I will just stipulate that that is the National Retailers Association, not the National Rifle Association. Strategic Retail and E-commerce Advisor at Team Global Express, Founder and MD at Future Ecom, Advisory Retail Board Chairman at Retail Global, and this year running 12 marathons in 12 months to raise money for Beyond Blue, the Dylan Alcott Foundation, Orange Sky Australia, and the Leukemia Foundation. What an amazing 2024 you are going to have.
I think my legs might disagree with you at the moment, having done two of the 12 marathons, but we're getting there.
So, Rob, heading up one of Australia's peak body for retailers, I'm really interested to get your perspective on the current retail climate and where you see the industry heading over the next couple of years, particularly with the introduction of many different technologies coming into the space. So let's kick off. First, I do have to ask, how is the body? Has it pulled up after running two marathons? And I think next one is next week in Singapore. Is that right?
Yeah, depending on the humidity over in Singapore, we fly there tomorrow and we've got some business with my partner's business. So if the humidity is good, I think I'll be getting up at 3 a.m. and knocking out. And it's a full marathon. We did two halves in San Diego. We tried one in Bali, but I almost got killed in the first 5K several times through mopeds. no one's used to running over there on the roads. So we did that in Brisbane instead. And now, four marathons, hopefully culminating in New York in November and a double marathon in the Gold Coast. But the legs are good. Lots of stretches, Pilates, yoga to refresh in between the runs. But it's good. Keeps me active, keeps the brain alert. Yeah. And if we can raise 50,000 for the four key charities, then it's a good thing.
Really? Absolutely. So, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, very impressive. 10K is probably my max that I've done in the past, and I can't think of anything worse than running a marathon. So well done.
Thank you very much. But it's demanding at the moment in business. And for me, it's a great release. I mean, within the retail, stepping across from as a board member for the last couple of years for the National Retail Association. Sorry for our American viewers, no guns here. We try to refer to ourselves as a national retail now. But in all seriousness, it is a challenging environment at the moment. Therefore, to do things like running does help balance one's both physical and mental health in these challenging times. What we're seeing really within the retail environment is some real strong headwinds. We have seen recently some well-known businesses publish some good results on the stock exchange. I feel, though, that gives a kind of false negative. There's certainly a two-speed economy. Whilst some of the big, like Universal Stores, Alice Barber, CEO, she's on our board as well. Mm-hmm. They've come up with some very good results, but they are, the exceptionals. Where retailers are tending to do above market expectations, their share price is therefore bouncing up. But in real terms, people are selling less products, and specifically around the SMEs. We have over 6,600 members, over 12,000 storefronts as part of our membership grouping, the majority of which are small to medium-sized businesses. In the retail industry at the moment, it's over $400 billion, over 19 billion transactions a year, and it's the largest employer for youth in the country. Mm-hmm. And when you have SMEs, we did a survey a sentiment survey last month, and it's fascinating where 44% said they're going to do worse or significantly worse sales this year. But most interestingly, that over 80% of all the businesses recorded that they're going to make less. Their operational costs are increasing. Now you've got to dive into that. Why, even when people are of the 56% who are thinking that the sales are going to be the same or more, why are those operational costs increasing? That's down to energy costs. It's down to retention and recruitment. And it's also down to operational costs where, you know, the Queensland Police reported a 30% increase in theft mm-hmm. in the last quarter. So for every for $9 billion lost in retail crime this year, the consumer pays for it, the retailer pays for it, and that's where those profit margins are getting squeezed. I think the overall viewpoint is there's some very strong challenges. I think until we start to see consistent interest rate cuts, and that's really not going to be until the second half of the year in Australia, a little bit better in America, we're really not going to see much confidence come back into retail, and therefore it will be a challenging next 6 months going forward.
What are the retailers telling you about bricks and mortar versus online? Is there still that growth in online, or is that sort of stable now?
Having been running and creating one of the leading online businesses over the last 10 years, I actually thought online was resilient. Online would be always growing. And whilst online people accessing online sales, it's actually the bricks and mortar over the last Christmas period that has increased in comparison to online. In very holistic general terms, online's flat or slightly reduced across all industries. Now that does vary, like fashion and clothing, shoes, that's significant. That's double digits down. Travel, that's up, and luggage up mm-hmm. because everyone's embracing, you know, my third trip internationally in 3 months tomorrow. but essentially online is flat and down. So you actually are seeing a resurgence back into bricks and mortars, because you've got to look at the customer experience and kind of what the consumers want, and they want a shopping experience. They've had a couple of years locked up. They've embraced the environment now and going out, and they want to have that. So what we did see, those two significant and fundamental changes in consumer spending, most of that pre-Christmas spending is now done in November. You saw Click Frenzy being moved. Yeah, yeah. Being moved from November into October. Yet they're the originators of the cyber frenzy in Australia, which we inherited from our American cousins. And now really, November, I did a piece for Inside Retail last year where, in essence, basically we've beat for ourselves, because we've trained the consumers to buying in November.
Yep.
So what happened was you had a jump in retail sales in November, but people didn't make any money because they're mm-hmm. discounting. And then you go into December, and that was a 2.8% drop.
Yeah.
So what you're, and month to month is an even bigger drop. So we are, that's one significant shift. And the other significant shift was buying online in cyber, but also that return to shopping centers as well.
But don't you find though now with Black Friday, it's not just one day. Last year it was the week. Was like a Black Friday week, and then this year, sorry, last year was like a month. It started on the 1st of November and ran through the whole month, Black Friday specials. The year before, it was a week.
Yeah.
What's going to happen this year?
Well, I'd actually argue it was a whole month, if not longer, because what you did was you had Click Frenzy starting end of October. You mm-hmm. had people going early. You know, early access to cyber month.
Yep.
You also had after payday, throw that in the middle of You got Singles Day with Alibaba and Amazon and others on the 11th as well. That's not so much embraced here, just due to obviously the war remembrance on the 11th of November. But in essence, it's a whole of November.
Yeah.
What happened was, a year, if you rewind 18 months ago, when most of the big retailers were ordering stock for Cyber and Christmas 2023, they overordered. So as they're coming in to the cyber period and Christmas sales, where they make two-thirds of their profit every year, suddenly they're sitting on a lot of stock. So what you saw was people going early, end of October, the whole of November being discount, and then extending that through to Boxing Day sales.
Yep.
So in reality, you've got 7 weeks of sales, whereas you rewind 2 or 3 years ago, you had the week of cyber, even had the weekend of cyber, you go back 5 years. Now it's in real terms, it's 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So it's, it, but we've, that the only people to blame here are retailers.
I was going to say you're training the consumer to only buy in sale time. I remember growing up, there was only two sales a year in retail.
Yep.
There was Boxing Day and mid-year. That's it.
Yeah.
Everything else, it, always it was at full price. And now every week, every second week, someone is doing a special weekend sale, or you know, discounts during the week or whatever it may be. So the retailers that train, they've trained us.
Yeah, it's a race to the bottom. And where so the counter argument is, how do you step out of that? How do you step out from always being a discount environment, always just, and my partner owns a very good luxury silk business, is how do you step out? How do you encourage your consumers to not always look for sale? And that's where you really do hone in on loyalty. You really do focus in on that retention, adding value back in, you know, whether it's gift with purchase, whether it's loyalty schemes, whether they're accumulating points to increase their average order frequency, so more orders per year, whether you're doing VIP access, whether, you know, is that real? It essentially comes down to retention, but it's also about the shopping and the customer experience, making them love your brand, become part of that tribe. The price isn't the number one. Yes, there will be in the mid-year, in the financial year, Boxing Day and cyber. That's a given now.
Mm-hmm.
However, in between times, you've got to try to get back to full price or higher margin selling time periods rather than always being in sale.
I'm not sure that we have the loyalty, the brand loyalty that we're used to.
No, you're completely correct. I think the Gen Z, I'm doing a talk today at Power Retail Show, and 80 to 85% of Gen Z will abandon their cart if there isn't sustainable business practices or return solutions, etc., within there. So the new consumers, they don't have that brand loyalty. They're looking for price, and they're looking for sustainability as two fundamentals.
Yeah.
So yeah, the whole I only buy from Myers, or I only buy R.M. Williams, or I only buy from Harvey Norman, those days are gone because Kogan's knocking on the door.
Yeah.
You've got other international department stores competing with the David Jones of the world. And you've got a myriad of international brands dealing in fashion and footwear. So there's just a lot more competition out there.
It must be then quite difficult for the big box retailers to have to pivot after having that brand loyalty for such a long time, to pivot to go, okay, we've got to have a whole new strategy, literally overnight.
The good retailers will have evolved. The good retailers would have understood this, but there is a certain level of arrogance within retail that, you know, the really good leaders in retail challenge the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
They look at what is being done now, but what could be done. what is going to be done in the future, not the here and now. You've always got, yes, you need to do correct P&L and balance sheet and keep the revenue coming in, but the focus is always on the horizon, not on here. And that's, unfortunately, saw a couple of big brands close recently in Australia. That's just due to them not evolving. They're not evolving their customer experience, really, and they've only got themselves to blame.
Yeah. Really. Across the board, we're seeing increasing crime, violence, and antisocial behaviour. And I spoke with David Stout. He was on the podcast last year regarding the Retail Crime Committee and the work that they do for the industry. What is your take on the current climate in relation to crime, and what more can retailers do to protect their staff, customers, and their products?
David Stout's our Director of Policy at the National Retail Association. And the National Retail with David work across all sectors of retail. We work with federal government, state government, large retailers, SMEs, but also shopping centres and employment like the SDA and shopping centres of Council of Australia as well. We are really the kind of the middle of the wheel for all these areas. And what we're seeing is a significant increase in retail crime. Obviously, the main elements are the key issues around organised retail crime, aggressive and violent behaviour, swarming effects as well. And we've seen again here in America and in the UK. Unfortunately, obviously, high value products have always been a target, but youth crime is certainly on the increase. I think I saw a stat the other day, 10% of all robberies done between 13 and 16-year-olds. And unfortunately, 65% of the crimes, there's these three 10%, which are just really poor reading, is 65% of the crime is done by 10% of the offenders in total. But only, and this is bad, I think, from a retail perspective, only 10% of crimes are actually reported to the police.
Yep.
Now, what does this say? with only 10% reported, it's a completely unrealistic viewpoint of what is actually happening in the real world. I know some of the governments around the country are getting targeted during the elections coming up, that they're not being tough on crime. Crime is in some areas out of control. Some of the shopping centres is really challenging and trying to it's all very well and good saying, you know, it's out of control, but what are those actions that can be done to restrict this? Because the issues are very much social issues as well. Those social issues are the society's issues as well. So it's not just retail, it's a society, antisocial behaviour, abusive. I mean, with the survey last year with 4,600 retail members, 87% of those were verbally abused. 12% of retailers have been physically abused, and that mentally affected 63% of retailers. Now, if you imagine, this is the biggest employer of youth, and I've got an 18-year-old and a 13-year-old son. Do I want them to go into retail? I would absolutely love them to go into retail because that's my background. I've done this for 30 years, and they've been part of my journey as a retailer and as an award-winning retailer. But for all the mums and dads out there, it is a hard justification when you're allowing your kids to go into a retail environment when they're going to get abused. So one of the policies which the National Retail came out last year was no one deserves a serve. Actually, an advertising policy with state and federal government and with the shopping centres of Australia and with the STA in promoting positivity. And when we did we did 28 interviews over Christmas, we had over 600 media articles. We're leading association for retailers in getting that messaging out about getting into the shops, getting that confidence back into retail. On the same side, really did encourage an acceptance, an understanding from consumers to respect retail staff. So yeah, it's a challenging environment at the moment in the volume of crime, because at the end of the day, $9 billion of lost product is going to go back into the pricing of, you know, the retailers aren't going to take that hit.
Yep.
It's going back onto the price. So therefore, the consumers are paying for it. So, so where we see such an increase in the cost of living, part of that in the retail world is due to theft.
Yeah. It's really disappointing that you've had to put initiatives out there. And I spoke to New Zealand Retail last week, Carolyn Young from New Zealand Retail New Zealand, sorry. They've had to do the same, and they're now going to reinvigorate theirs because, you know, they're just seeing more and more violence towards retail staff. I spoke to Retail Drinks Australia. They've got their policy and initiative that they launched pre-Christmas. Like, it's getting to a how much further do you have to go, and how do we get governments involved to try and stop this, or how do we stop it, or how do we reduce it? Because we're never going to stop it.
I think there's some interesting, you know, certainly which might come on to technology is one of the first things from what a retailer can do is technology, whether that's through CCTV, whether that's through security tagging, just making it harder for theft to occur. That I think is a requirement of retailers to do. You don't make life easy because you become the target.
Yep.
And I think though, you know, with such a low reporting rate, there's also low confidence in the process. I think the justice system is completely out of line with community expectations. You know, I know that my car got robbed three times in 6 months. At one stage, I chased after, and they're all young offenders under 18. And, you know, whilst I'm a good runner, I'm not a fast runner. And they got away. And they eventually got caught, and they had another 57 offences. And when, you know, we got the report through as a victim of crime, it's like, what was it? You know, they got a suspended sentence. You've impacted 57 different people, families, properties, and you're getting a slap on the wrist and don't do it again.
Yeah.
You know, that's, so I think that it's a culmination of retailers need to be very much in the front through technology. I think the justice system needs to step up and be a lot more robust. I think what is good is when we're working with, you know, areas like Westfield shopping centres and the vicinity and others, is actually enforcing banning of those repeated young offenders, specifically banning them from those centres. Because by banning them, that's taking away their social license, their social interaction. That might stop the next cohort or the next level of young offenders from doing those crimes. So but we've got to back it up. You've got to work with police. And unfortunately, the police systems are quite outdated and completely under-resourced. From the many police I know, and two of my best friends are police officers in Queensland and Victoria, you know, they're as frustrated as any consumer is due to the inaction, due to the, you know, as much as there is intent and desire to fix this problem, the volume. So I think it's a multi, it's just, there isn't a magic wand, there isn't a one pill to fix all. It has to be both the consumers, you know, being aware and reporting these crimes, prevention in terms of technology, but also legislation as well.
Do you find it frustrating when you hear things like, I believe it's here in Victoria, they're looking to increase the age of a youth offender from 14 to 16.
It's frustrating because these things are done in isolation. They're not looking at those points in holistically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you gotta actually fundamentally think, why is a 14-year-old doing a crime? And from a parent, I would probably say, well, it's the environment you're in.
Absolutely.
But then there are huge society issues at the moment. I think it takes a generation to change a generation. So this isn't going to be fixed in the next 6 months or 12 months, etc. But it is setting the example. And I don't think increasing the age helps this situation. You've got to be tackling, and it sounds absolutely insane, but you've got to be tackling sowing the positive seed in primary schools, in junior schools, so that by the time we get to high schools, they're not thinking that stealing from shops is an acceptable social norm. In a way, it is, and therefore changing the age is a bit like, I'm going to have a light alcohol beer. It's still a beer. things have to be looked at in an umbrella effect, not in isolation.
So with things like this, when they're going to change or talking about changing legislation, how does the National Retailers Association get involved to try and lobby for the retail market?
Yeah, we spend, National Retail spends a lot of time with representatives from state government, federal government, the police associations, retailers, industry associate, other industries, and we do have to have a collaborative approach here. So we try to involve all parties. Just before Christmas, we had a retail crime summit in our headquarters in Queensland, in Brisbane. And we brought together the local councils, governments, police agencies, shopping centres and big retailers, as well as representatives of SMEs as well, to get everyone's input. And from that came out loud and clear that we have to have that multi-levelled approach from tackling the reporting first and foremost. You need to get, if you don't have credible data, good data in, good data out, it's like any business.
Yep.
Crap data in, crap results out.
Yep.
And until we start to report crime in actual real numbers, where if only 10% are being recorded, you're not getting a true picture. Now, if we had that reporting done correctly today, I would say that every government and every federal department would be absolutely alarmed, would be doing immediate action. But they don't, because now we have to extrapolate data. I think the starting point for the National Retail was identifying that the data, the reporting was an issue, and looking at ways to make it easy for retailers or shopping centres to report crime to the police, and that there is an effective and time-effective way to deal with those crimes. And from there, then other policies like No One Deserves a Serve, consumer advice, consumer education. Also, we're doing with the National Retail a lot with actual retailers themselves, as how do you deal, like courses on how do you deal with abusive customers. Whilst you don't want that, mm-hmm. whilst you don't want to ever see that in the retail environment, that's a reality. Mm-hmm. Therefore, and providing those content for actual staff to feel empowered, but also encouraging retailers, giving them a framework to able for them to educate their staff so that they feel secure, they feel empowered, and they actually know what to do. if they have a retail crime. You see, some, unfortunately, some retailers around the country are actually saying, stand back. You know, literally, if you see, and you see all this TikToks and all this Instagram rubbish floating around of, you know, people recording this retail crime, people just walking out. I mean, it is a real catch 22. It's like your gut says you need to do something. Like, I chased after my guys that were robbing my car, you know, three of them. And the police were like, what would you have done if you'd got them? I said,
well, that's the thing. And, you know, we saw here in Victoria a month or so ago where there was a home invasion and a man got in his car and drove after I think it was three youths that were in the car that had invaded his home, and there was an altercation and he was
died.
Killed.
Yeah, it's a doctor. And
yeah.
And it's tragic.
Yeah.
Know, leaving behind a family because he was standing up for that. But again, it's getting the recognised processes and the legislation in place to make this really a deterrent. It again takes that generation to change generation. You have to start putting those laws in place to ensure that it's really deterred from the thought process of doing a crime rather than after the event. Because I'm sure, and I'm not going to speak on behalf of those offenders, but did they think they were going to kill someone that day? Absolutely not. But it, that's the frustration which people are finding, that they're going to stand up for themselves. There's nothing we would ever condone or recommend. But it's a reflection on there is an imbalance. That's why we have to look at it from government, retail and industry collectively.
How do you feel about the media coverage that happens with regards to shoplifting and retail crime? Because it seems to be more in the media. I don't know if it's the shock story that, you know, to try and get everyone on edge or to say to those young offenders, you know, we know what's going on and it's not on and you can't treat people like that. That I feel like over the last probably 12 to 18 months, there's been a bigger focus from the media's perspective with regards to retail crime. Do you think that's beneficial to retail or not?
I think overall more reporting is a good thing. Mm-hmm. As we're seeing where only 10% of retail crime is being reported. You're never going to get a reporting of crime in a measurable way from the press. The press are here to make money. They're here to get clicks. Mm-hmm. They're here to sell newspapers in the lesser degree now, but online it's about impressions and it's about conversion. It's the metrics of any online business now, whether you're a media company or you're a product seller. There is not consistency in the reporting. And yes, they will focus in on the extremes of what is going on out there. Is it a bad thing? It really does depend upon one's viewpoint on reporting and the quality of reporting and who's reporting and how it's being done. I generally think they can be at times scaremongering, but I do think it's actually, there is so much going on that it should be reported. It should be publicised, because at the end of the day, we've got to protect our retail staff. We've got to protect our retail businesses. Mm-hmm. And in $9 billion worth of theft every year, you know, that's a couple of percent. And sometimes in some retail areas, double-digit increase in the pricing of products, so you're paying for it.
Yeah.
You know, so the mum and dads of the world are having to pay for these offenders thinking they can get away with robbing the stores. And yeah, that's why it takes a generation to change it. But I think the reporting, it's a kind of, in a way, a bit of a necessary ill. Whilst you don't necessarily agree with how things are reported on or the volume or the speed, or, you know, there'll be a spurt of it, then it'll be not a lot. But again, it kind of goes with the political landscape as well. But I'd rather there be the reporting than there be none at all, really.
Why do you think retailers don't report retail crime? Is it because it's too difficult? Is it because it's time consuming? And how do we encourage retailers to report the incidents that happen within their stores?
That's a very good question. We should be encouraging them to report it, but again, it's putting in within the retail groups, within the independent retail stores, with the police or with the shopping centres, an easy and time effective way for reporting, some consistency. I think people just go in this, it's in the too hard basket, someone, saw them stealing a t-shirt, it might be unit cost of $3. Is it worth spending 2 hours having to fill out forms with the police, etc.? No. I think we are, as a society, extraordinarily time poor across our lives. I know I am, where you just don't have enough time to do things as, should we say, effectively as you want them to do. So we need to make new systems that are consistent, that are effective in time, that actually the police can use. Again, it's their processes and retailers' processes and shopping centre processes aren't aligned. So therefore we need, and this is what National Retail are trying to do, is to try and bring in some standardisation so that it is a lot more time effective, but also it has real impact. It actually has results, because if people see that when they report, things do happen, then they will continue to report. What I think is happening now is it's just literally, it's too hard, too time consuming. You don't see results. And even if it does get reported and someone does get caught or it's corrected, then the courts aren't really reflecting what should be done. So again, it's that multi, to encourage that, you need to see results. Yeah. It's rewarding positive behaviour. It's a basic psychology. And at the moment, there's too many breaks in the link for people to report. But we have to report, because if only 10% are being reported, then
That's a frightening stat, 10%.
I'm not going to be a big major publication, but this is a bit of an epidemic out there.
Yeah.
It really is. This is a bit the where we did our sentence report the other day. The three major elements affecting retail at the moment is energy costs, sustainability, and retention of staff. And that retention of staff comes down to wages, etc. But it also comes down to the environment.
Mm-hmm.
You can't keep staff if this emergency in retail of retail crime is carrying on. And this is why I think really have to push the technology front, where what will happen, I hope to see, is you put better technology in, like people, a lot more AI. And yes, there are some fundamental issues around that, about checks and compliances, but you put in some really good tech into the retail environments, then what's going to happen is that the offenders will avoid those stores.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if those offenders avoid those stores, then they'll go to other stores. Now, then those stores will kind of go, well, hang on, how come my theft has gone up, whereas this other retailer has gone down because of technology? Right, so then they adopt that technology, and then you're making it harder for offenders to commit crimes. So it is... I would prefer it to be society led and technology led in really pushing the boundaries, where it's just making it an awful lot tougher for them.
From a technology perspective, where if I put loss prevention to the side, how do you see technology play out in retail with the likes of AI, let's say, for as an example, or we're seeing more and more retailers deploy RFID within their stores to help their inventory stock levels and things like that. How do you see technology play in retail as a general rule of thumb?
Again,
is it the necessary evil?
It is. You can't stand in the way of technology advances, really. Mm-hmm. It's a bit, you have the technology, you got to use it. Now, yeah, there are going to be a tiny minority in every area of society that will use technology for ill-gotten gains, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But the benefit of new tech is far outweighs the negative. So where you're introducing consumer tracking, where you're introducing RFID in terms of even in time, the RFID in terms of time management and stock management is going to be a major efficiency drive now in the mm-hmm. future.
Yep.
The facial recognition AI technology, yep, there's going to be civil rights who will stand up and go, yeah, and you do need to put those safeguards in place. But if this comes down to 65% of the offences are done by 10%, then let's identify who these 10% are. And if we are alerted, they're going to get arrested.
Yeah.
So you're removing the problem.
Yeah, I think people don't understand facial recognition. It's not been explained properly to the general public, considering that there are cameras on every street corner in every state capital that you go and territory that you are in this country and over in New Zealand. It surprises me that people that get so up in arms about, oh, no, you can't go into Bunnings or Kmart and, you know, your face is on their database. Well, it is, but it's only if you're an offender.
Yeah. Yeah, don't worry about it if you're a good living citizen.
Yeah.
So I think you hit the nail on the head there. That it's about education.
Mm.
It really is. I mean, I look at the online penetration. Excuse me. Too much running. Too much. the lungs are getting a bit tortured at the moment. You look at how, you know, go back 20 years about online commerce, and people would say, you know, oh, you put your credit cards in, you're going to get ripped off, you're going to lose all your data, etc. Now, hey, there's been some big, you know, data breaches and some well-publicized cases. However, the majority of people now buy online.
Yep.
And the security conditions are put in place now that secure checkout, SSLs, whatever the benchmarking is for prevention of cyber crime, very, very high now. Exactly the same now in safeguarding shopping centres, retail precincts, stores and staff. There is technology, both in terms of RFID, both in terms of, you know, like the Gutman Mark and the guys at Checkpoint, what they're doing a lot with Coles, and we're doing a lot with Woolies as well, with the National Retail Association, Kmart, all of these big companies recognize the need to do things differently because it is an epidemic at the moment. So therefore, if you're not committing a crime, there's going to be safeguards put in place to ensure civil rights aren't affected. But this is the future. Don't stand in the way of technology that will make products cheaper. There's going to be less theft and a massive deterrent to repeat offenders. Again, we're talking about 10% here.
Yeah.
10%, 65% of offences are done by 10%. If you're that 10%, I want you to be worried coming to shopping centre. I want to bring my kids in there and feel safe.
Yep.
I don't want this swarming going on. I don't want, you know, knife crime. I don't want any of that. If you're recognised as carrying a knife and it gets alerted to the shopping centre security and the police can arrest you, you shouldn't be carrying a knife.
Yeah. Not in this country. Yeah.
Not in this country. Now, in America, let's not carry guns, please. Okay? Jim Jeffries does a great YouTube thing about the American National Retail Association. I won't go into your Second Amendment or Third Amendment. My apologies for my lack of knowledge on that to our American cousins. However, just from the Australian perspective, it's knives, not guns. But the same thing goes, you know, you don't need to be taking weapons into a retail environment. And if you do and you get recognised by technology, good. That's what technology is there for, to do. Let's just start to actually own it and impact it and actually embrace the advances that can be done to safeguard our society, not to protect the tiny majority that want to do a crime.
Yeah, agreed. 100% agree. Rob, we've reached the final countdown, your last three questions. So firstly, who is your go-to person when you need advice on loss prevention or security issues?
That's a great question. On cybercrime, I would say Palo Alto, because my godfather, my son's Ben Ludkin, happy birthday today, mate. He's one of the leading execs, and what they do from cyber is unparalleled. I think from a product perspective, what Mark Stafford and the guys at Checkpoint are doing is really cutting edge, and we worked with them over a number of years in that physical security of product. Mm-hmm. But I do actually back some of the big businesses in terms of the surveillance and the insights they are starting to generate. We just need to get community acceptance and education. So I think there's a lot in Spurium in the West Farmers Group and both Westfield and Vicinity. They're doing an awful lot. They are, you know, the Shopping Centre Council of Australia. They're doing a lot with the national retail in trying to make it a fair output for all participants. So, yeah, I back the policies which we're doing with those centres and the police as well.
Just on Palo Alto, one of our committee members, Mark Boyd, works for Palo Alto. So
there you go.
Nice little shout out to them. Rob, you've had a very diverse work history. How did you get into the industry and why is it interesting to you?
My ex-stepfather, I won't go into why he's my ex-stepfather, but he was the finance director of Boots a Chemist, which is the largest pharmacy in the UK. And I was brought up in retail. Mm-hmm. And I always had jobs within retail. And when I moved to Australia 20 years ago, I wanted to create the Australian equivalent of Ann Summers, which is a sexual wellness company mm-hmm. in the UK. And I worked with various businesses, and I actually did what I said I was going to do, created Love Honey, which is the biggest online wellness company in Australia. We now, I think, globally turn over 600 million. And we started from scratch. I think we got to about 60 plus million in Australia in 9 years before I left last year. Mm-hmm. And that's something I'm very proud of, in that we were a market disruptor. We went away from this. I saw that adult retail was archaic and old, and it needed to evolve like our European contemporaries, and I did exactly that. So retail to me has always been a challenge. I'm about to launch a new direct-to-consumer partnership for logistics today with Team Global Express, so a real alternative to Australia Post. So we launched that today. So I do awesome. Like the disruption and
you
also
like a challenge, don't you?
12 marathons, 12 months. Setting up you know, we have 15,000 employees, and we have the largest intermodal logistics providers in Australia. So, and it's the lowest carbon emitting logistics provider in the country. So we launched that today. So nothing like that. I do like retail because it's a heart you know, it's the heart of retail. We're the biggest employer of the youth, but we're the second biggest employer, full stop. The 19 billion transactions a year we have over here. I mean, that's huge. So I love it because you bring in new technology, you have meet great people. And I met Richard Branson a few weeks ago. I got to interview Karen Walker in New Zealand, famous fashion designer. Sir Graham Henry, the All Blacks coach. Peter Buchanan, he created Good American with Kim Kardashian. I interview all these people around the world as part of my job. So I'm very fortunate to meet the best of the best in retail. And I will be meeting someone very famous next week, which you'll read about it in the papers. So it, to me personally, it's an honour to do what I do, really.
Fantastic. Retail. And in your opinion, what's the next big thing for retail in Australia?
The next, oh, wow, that's a cracky one. The next big thing in retail is personalization, where you take that customer experience to the next level, whether that is through AI, whether it is through loyalty, dedicated communications, really sophisticated logistics. You know, again, bringing in the gig economy into established businesses, bringing in that AI. I think the advances we can make in that personalization where, and again, you have Alexa, Google, all these voice activated. I think that the big thing for retail it is personalization, is where you cut through all the chaff and you go in, you go into your websites and they know you. Mm-hmm. That's is the cost of acquisition today have never been higher. You know, through Meta, through Google, through general above the line advertising, it's never been higher. So therefore, once you have a customer, you need to keep a customer, and it's a retention, average order frequency, and average order value. How do you migrate that? And the best thing to do is to really understand your customer, personalize your experiences to them, and then hopefully you will change that Gen Z loyalty into being true loyalty, and you create your tribe. And I look at companies like LSKD, which I run with. They have a tribe. That's probably the best example out there, that they've migrated from online now into retail stores.
They've done a great job.
And I just use them as a one-off because that is personalization. I get my emails to me. They know what products to send me. That whole customer journey is trackable, you know. So that's... And this is what my driving force working with Team Global Express and with the National Retail is all about, the individual driving that connection.
Fantastic. Rob, thanks so much for your time today, and good luck with the launch. And thanks for sharing your thoughts on retail in Australia in 2024. I hope that the retailers have a successful year. We want great profits and low shrinkage. And also all the best for your marathons. It's an amazing thing that you're doing, a great job bringing awareness and financial support to some very well-deserved charities. So all the best for that. And after this, I might get the links for your donations and I shall put them in the show notes. So if people want to donate, they can. So that would be fantastic too. We'd like to see more than 50,000. That'd be awesome. I mean, 50,000 is a lot of money, but, you know, if we can get more, that's even better.
Yeah, I think we're very privileged to be in the roles that we do have. And I feel quite humbled to do what I do, and to be able to return to mental health, to people with disabilities, getting employment with Dylan Alcott and Beyond Blue. Orange Sky, homeless, you know, we see it everywhere, the disparity within society. And also, you know, losing some dear friends to leukemia. I think if we can give back, we're being better humans. So, yeah, if anyone can donate, that would be hugely appreciative.
Perfect. If you'd like more information on the NRA, please visit their website at nationalretail.org.au. And if you'd like to reach out to Rob, you can find him on LinkedIn, and I'll put his contact details and the donation details in the show notes. You can subscribe to this weekly podcast via iTunes, Google Podcasts and Spotify. And there's a link to download episodes and show notes on the PPFF website. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the Profit Protection Future Forum. It is written and produced by myself, Nicole Smith. If you'd like to ask a question regarding anything loss prevention, please send me an email at nicolesmith@ppff.com.au and I will get it answered for you on an upcoming recording. I'll be back to keep talking all things profit protection.
Thanks for listening to Retails, Conversations with Profit Protection. If you like what you hear, make sure you subscribe via iTunes, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. If you want to find out more about the Profit Protection Future Forum, head to profitprotection.co or find us on LinkedIn. Drop us a message on info@profitprotection.co with feedback on our show.